creating a way of thinking and talking that enhances your ability to be in your heart so that you can both come together and care for everybody's needs. For example, safety, security, acceptance, love, kindness, warmth, care, stability, trust. Those are needs. That's where people get into conflict and they say, my strategy is right, your strategy is wrong. It's okay to not meet your needs because you're contributing to someone else. It's not okay to suppress your need because you think it's going to cause sin.
Welcome to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, where we meet the world's top experts to explore the secrets of health, mindset, longevity, and so much more. Are you ready to take charge of your existence and biohack your life? This show is for you. Please keep in mind, we're not dispensing medical advice and are not responsible for any outcomes you may experience from implementing the tactics lying herein. Are you ready? Let's do this. Welcome back to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Friends, I am so honored and so excited to have Dr. Matthew Letterman back on the show. He is well known for his work with the Forks Over Knives series. He's in the documentary, and he co-authored one of the New York Times best-selling books in that series. And I had him on the show last time for his incredible book, Wellness to Wonderful, 9 Pillars for Living Healthier, Longer, and with Greater Joy. And we talked briefly in that episode about something that he touches on in his book, which is the concept of nonviolent communication, and in particular, how that applies to parenting. I was so fascinated by this approach. So when I found out he was launching a new podcast about it, the We Be Parents podcast, I knew I had to have him back on. And I am super impressed with his We Be Calm device, which is an incredible tool that you can use to gamify a certain specific type of breathing that will instantly calm your child's stress. We talk about it in this show, but this device is what you need to get your kids into the habit of learning how to calm themselves and regulate their emotions in any situation or scenario. It's great for helping them sleep, deal with anxiety, deal with nervousness, stop tantrums and meltdowns, help foster connection, and it can even help with autism, focus, and ADHD. If you have kids, if you have friends with kids, get this for them now. It is a no-brainer, and you can get 15% off with the coupon code WEBEPARENTS. That's W-E-B-E parents. And you can get that at webecalm.com. That's W-E-B-E-K-A-L-M.com. And all of that said, this episode is not just for people with kids. You guys know me. I don't have kids. I don't plan to have kids. There is so much to learn here when it comes to nonviolent communication. And in this show, we talk about what that is. We talk about how to communicate with anyone from a place of the heart. We talk about the role of needs versus strategies and how communication breaks down with people. We talk about empathy, whether or not you should make demands of your kids, the problems with the artificial harmony, whether or not you can actually resolve chronic pain by changing your communication and language approach, and so much more. I can't wait to hear what you guys think. Definitely let me know in my Facebook group, IF Biohackers, Intermittent Fasting plus Real Foods plus Life. Comment something you learned or something that resonated with you on the pinned post to enter to win something that I love. And then check out my Instagram, find the Friday announcement post, and again, comment there to enter to win something that I love. The show notes for today's episode will be at melanieavalon.com/webe. That's W-E-B-E. All right, I think that's all the things. As a brief reminder, you can get 15% off the WeBe Calm device at webecalm.com with the coupon code WeBeParents. That's W-E-B-E-K-A-L-M.com with the coupon code WeBeParents, W-E-B-E Parents. I cannot recommend this device enough. Get it for your kids. Get it for anybody who has kids. It would make a perfect gift. If you need holiday gifts, birthday gifts, get this now. All right, without further ado, please enjoy this fabulous conversation with Dr. Matthew Letterman. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the show. I am so incredibly excited about the conversation I'm about to have. It is with a repeat guest, and I love repeat guest episodes because it means you know that I really, really love the content here. And so the backstory on today's episode, back in November 2023, I had Dr. Matthew Letterman on the show, and that was an incredible interview. He is actually a star in the documentary Forks Over Knives, which I was super familiar with, and I had him on his show for his book that he was coming out at the time called Wellness to Wonderful. I immediately knew that I wanted to have him on the show for that book. His resume is honestly kind of breathtaking. So in addition to, like I said, being in the documentary Forks Over Knives, he has co-authored 6 books, including a New York Times bestseller. That does include The Forks Over Knives Plan, as well as The Whole Foods Diet, which I actually read that book when it came out. Like I said, I had him on for Wellness to Wonderful. He also served for 10 years as the Whole Foods Market Vice President of Medical Affairs, which is super cool, and actually helped launch their national medical and wellness centers, as well as some of their insurance networks. Since then, however, when I read the book, I was anticipating it to be mostly about diet, honestly. And there was a lot in there about diet. I went way beyond that as far as health and wellness in general and a comprehensive view to all of that. And one of the topics that I was really intrigued with was this idea of nonviolent communication, specifically when it comes to parenting. And I know I've talked on this show quite a bit about how I don't anticipate having kids. I just don't think it's in my, I don't see it in my trajectory of life, but I think parenting is obviously so important. And I am forever grateful to the parents out there who are raising awesome kids, because it just helps everybody and we need it for our world. And I'm so grateful for all of the methods that can help with that. And like I said, I was so fascinated by this nonviolent communication approach. Since then, Matt has actually launched a podcast for this called We Be Parents Podcast. And I've been listening to the episodes. And honestly, friends, it's not just about parenting. This can, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in the episode, but this approach can apply to so many people when it comes to healthy communication. And there is just so much to learn here. And then on top of that, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but Matt has also created this awesome device called the We Be Calm, which is a gamified breathing device for kids. So we will dive deep into that as well. But I just have so many questions. And Matt, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me and for your support. I love it. I appreciate it.
Likewise, I really do appreciate everything that you do. Like I said, listening to your podcast, I was like, everybody needs to listen to this because it can help so many people. But a question to start things off. So this whole concept of nonviolent communication, how did you come to it? How long have you been interested in it, you know, working with it? What's the backstory there?
Yeah, so I came to it, I was exposed to it a long time ago, working with a therapist and said, oh yeah, I think this would be, you'd really enjoy this. I read it and understood it and thought it was cool, but didn't really dive in deep until I had some issues with chronic pain. And I don't remember if we talked about this last time, but the impact or how chronic pain works, there's a mechanisms around how disconnecting from feelings and needing and emotional suppression and all sort of things like that can actually prime and activate pain pathways. And at first I thought that was nuts, but as I deepened into the reading around the research around that, I thought there was something there, and I decided to test it on myself. And at that point I realized I was pretty disconnected from what I was feeling in me. And I reached out to an old nonviolent communication mentor of mine and said, hey, can you help me connect to feelings and needs? They're saying that that's going to help but this chronic pain, I'm willing to try anything. And I had this chronic back pain and sciatica for 6 months. And she said, of course. And I started working with her and my pain went away within a couple of months. And I haven't tried everything before. So I was like completely sold. But then as I was working with nonviolent communication, I was really enjoying it and being able to uncover and can self-connect. And then it started really helping me with my marriage and my connection with my wife and my kids. And I said, this is great. Everybody's got to try this. And that's when I decided to become a certified nonviolent communication trainer and started the 4-year training program.
Okay. So I'm really excited to dive into what it is exactly. But so to clarify, you started just yourself doing the nonviolent communication with everybody you were talking to?
Yes. I started it myself, learning about it and trying to, you know, practice it just in all of my relationships. But it was, when I first learned it, it was really an intellect. I learned it sort of in my head, but I didn't really get it in my heart. And there's a big piece about sort of how you see and relate to other people and think about other people that is as important as shifting your language. And I was focused initially on shifting the language. And when I worked with the mentor, he helped me shift the heart space. And when I started training, that was actually the bigger part of the training was learning how to shift how I showed up. And my assessor, who was the person that approved the certification after 4 years, making sure that I sort of embodied the consciousness.
What is the basic tenet of this approach? I guess it's funny because we have to talk about the language of it.
The idea is that the focus is on the connection with the other person. So I care more about my heart being open and seeing what's inside someone else's heart than I care about anything else. And if my focus is always on expressing what's authentically in my heart and trying to look between the words and actions to get at what's in the heart of the other person, that if I focus in that space, something magical and beautiful comes out of that. And that's a place where everybody's needs can be met because we care about everybody and we're all soft and we're all in that heart space. But people are educated and conditioned and sort of self-protected from trauma to not open up their hearts and sort of close them down. In fact, we have a term that implies almost a weakness, right? We'll say, when we share from the heart, we're being vulnerable. Right? Vulnerable almost means it's dangerous. There's an idea of and instead it's actually quite powerful to share from the heart and go into that heart space. We've just been conditioned not to.
As far as interpreting other people's hearts, what is the role of knowing what they actually are feeling or saying, like your perspective of it? Like, how do you know that you're interpreting correctly people's hearts?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So you don't know if you're interpreting correctly. What matters more to the other person and what matters more to the connection between the two of you is that you're trying to understand what's in their heart. And as long as you're trying, they'll direct you where you need to go. So for example, and I'm not saying I'm able to do this all the time. In fact, my life's work is being able to do this and clean up the messes when I don't. But for example, the other night, I got into an argument with my 12-year-old daughter, and she forgot to do her homework. And after a 4-day weekend and being on the iPad during the day, an hour before bedtime, she gets up and says, "I got an hour of homework or 2 hours of homework." And I was like, I was very upset. So my heart was shut down, right? It was tightened up. When you get upset, you know that your heart's tight. And so I had this first tend to that. But once my heart softened, I had to get, because she now was feeling angry. That was what her surface feeling was. And I could see in her face, she was not looking at me. Her eyes were darting. She had a tension in her face. I could see the muscles tight. She was squinting. She was giving me short answers. She was talking with a tone. So all of that I interpreted as she was angry. Now I could have stayed at the anger or I could go to the heart. And actually it took me until then that night and then the next morning to get to the heart, which was she's actually feeling ashamed and she's feeling really disappointed and she has needs for self-acceptance and understanding and warmth and kindness. And I wasn't warm and kind when I was talking with tone about her not being responsible, right? When I was a little bit activated. And when I connected to the fact that she has an inner critic, and we all have a loud inner critic. Her inner critic was saying, "Kylie, what's wrong with you? You want your parents to see that you're competent at schoolwork and responsible, and your teacher's going to not think you're responsible, and your friends are going to make fun of you for forgetting to do your homework. You're such a jerk. You're an idiot." And he was saying all these mean things to her. So she was feeling embarrassed and ashamed and hurt and sad, even though on the surface it was anger and defensiveness. But that was covering up what was going on in her heart. So do you see how once I was able to get to her heart, that she so wants to be seen as this responsible kid and is trying so hard and she's made a mistake and she knows it. Then I was able to connect to her heart and we were able to let the critic come out, which there's a little exercise for that. And then she was able to soften and that restored our connection. Does that make sense or is that too many words?
No. Okay. So it's good. So question there. So the realization that you had that it was her inner critic and her guilt and everything and not, the laziness or whatever it is, or, procrastinating or the feelings there that it was coming from that. Did you have that realization on your own? And then you came back to her and changed the relationship between you two, or did she communicate that to you?
No, she did not communicate that to me. I guessed it. So first thing, when I talk about connection, the first thing you do is you focus on your heart. And you if your heart is tight, if you're feeling triggered or activated, you can't connect with anybody else. So what you want to do is give yourself empathy and say, Matt, you know, and I spent some time journaling and reflecting, depending on how upset you are. Sometimes I do it right in the moment. But that one, there was a bunch of things going on that I took a little bit of time. And that's okay to say to someone, hey, you know what? My heart's feeling a little tight right now. I really want to connect with you. I want to take a little time and then I'm going to circle back with you. And when I take that time, then I can do empathy to myself. Matt, are you feeling really frustrated? You really want a peace of mind that at 12 years old, she's going to remember her responsibilities and take care of them and not wait to the last minute. And she's going to be successful in school and that she's not going to need you looking over her shoulder and she's going to turn things in and keep her agreements at school, you know, her assignments. And what I really needed, she was getting defensive and I really needed her to have some self-awareness and self-responsibility that she made a mistake. And if she's aware of the problem, then we can, you know, the flaw in the system where she forgot her homework, then she can fix it. And what was interesting was once I realized that's what my need was, peace of mind, that she's going to be able to identify problems and fix them so that she can be successful in this world, I was able to soften and be like, oh, I'm really worried about her. But the way I'm communicating it is the opposite of supportive, right? I'm worried about her. And the way I'm trying to meet my need to get that peace of mind is by thinking critically, having some tone, you know, not being warm and kind. So Matt, let's rethink this. And that softened me to then explore what was going on in her.
So I have some more questions about the needs. One really quick question. Have you been implementing this with both of your kids since they were born?
I started doing it. My daughter, the Kylie, who's 12 now, when I started really diving in, she had just turned 6. And the other daughter, who's 10 now, was 4. So they've been doing it for, Kylie's been exposed to it for at least half of her life, and Jordan for more than half. But kids all pick this up very quickly. It's the adults that have to do more unlearning of their old habits.
Yeah. Are there a lot of studies on this approach, like in the literature?
There's some studies on nonviolent communication and the impact it has. But I tell people, you know, to try it and see and feel the impact, and that will be even more convincing than the studies.
The reason I was thinking about the studies was, it's interesting. So the two other books I'm reading right now actually are both about a lot about childhood. So one is about childhood trauma and ACEs and things like that. And one is about attachment style and attachment theory. So I've been reading a lot about like the critical time windows of childhood development. So I was just thinking about, I'm wondering, children that are raised in this approach from, you know, day one, if there's a different effect or not. But it's nice to hear, like you said, that something that can be learned at any point.
Yeah, I think even people that have been doing MBC since they were kids, I mean, the parents still get triggered. The different kids have different tendencies around how they react to stressors. You know, and I think that's where the sort of attachment styles, for example. So different attachment styles, they might have different strategies that they gravitate towards as far as how they, you know, sort of navigate life and relationships. But this, what's different about nonviolent communication is it's really about the present moment and creating a skill set, a way of thinking and talking that enhances your ability to be in your heart, see someone else's heart so that you can both come together and care for everybody's needs. And through that, all this stuff is achieved. Right? Everybody's needs get met. And that's, you know, life is wonderful. And that's useful. The creator of NBC used to talk about, you know, it's, are you playing a game of right or wrong, good or bad, right? That's the conventional way of sort of trying to control people by saying this behavior is right, that behavior is wrong, this is good, that's bad. You should do this, you shouldn't do that. Or we can go over to this other side and play, hey, what's going to make our life most wonderful for both of us?
So this idea of needs, what is the role of needs versus wants?
Mm-hmm. Good. So it's a language framework. You know, sometimes people call them needs or wants. But I see what you're saying. There's sort of strategies in MVC, online communication. We differentiate between needs and strategies and or values, right? So needs are these abstract traits that everybody shares, or abstract, you know, sort of life-serving values, needs, traits, whatever you want to call them. So for example, safety, security, acceptance, love, kindness, warmth, care, sustenance, right? Stability, trust, right? Those are needs. See how they're more abstract? And then the strategies are ways to meet those needs. So some people feel secure through the strategy of owning a gun. Other people like to have an alarm system. And other people like to live in a community, you know, where there's 20 people in the house and, you know, we're all sort of there. And I feel very, my need for security is met in that way. So you see how there's three different ways there to meet the same need for security. So that's where people get into conflict, is when they argue over strategy and they say, my strategy is right, your strategy is wrong, versus we both have different strategies and we all value security.
So when people seem to be having conflict over needs, is it over disagreeing about whether somebody needs something or not? Are they actually usually disagreeing over the strategy, not the need?
Right. Strategy and maybe, right, strategies and priorities. So if you're really hungry, if you're driving in a car and you're really hungry, you want to meet your need for food right away. You have less reserve to hold off. Someone else is a little bit hungry. They're like, we could stop now, but I'm fine waiting a couple hours too. So the meeting your need for hunger is more of a priority to you. But how you meet your need for hunger, they might say someone might give you a snack in the car. You might pull over and stop at a restaurant. You might do drive-through. You know, you might meditate and try and see how long you can sit with your hunger. But all of those are going to address your need in some way.
Okay. Is happiness considered a need?
Happiness is a feeling. So feelings are really, this is almost like I told you what to say and you're sort of leading me along this path. This is great. So feelings are sort of senses in the body, right? Sensations that we then, you know, sort of say, oh, I recognize that feeling. And then we put a word to it. But it's basically a sensation that causes you to take action or tells you, you know, if it's an unpleasant feeling, you know, for example, I feel fear as I get closer to, and basically it's taking action to meet a need. So feelings come and go based on whether you're meeting needs or not. So if you're meeting a need, you feel a pleasant feeling. If your need is not being met, or you're worried it won't be met in the future, you feel an unpleasant feeling. So for example, if I have a need for safety, as I get closer to the edge of a cliff, I'm going to feel the sensation of fear, which is going to tell me to take action to step back from the cliff. If I didn't feel fear, I wouldn't know to take action. And assume as I step back from the cliff, the fear will go away. And then actually, if I get further away from the cliff, I might feel pretty comfortable. So now I go from an unpleasant feeling to a pleasant feeling. Now my need for safety is met. Somebody put a railing up on the cliff. I have a chair over here. I'm not standing at the edge. Now I go from feeling fear to feeling comfort.
Hey, friends. Did you know there is an ancient botanical that modern research shows performs on a level comparable to metformin when it comes to supporting healthy blood sugar levels? And not only that, this compound also supports the gut microbiome, healthy cholesterol levels, and even stimulates the AMPK pathway in the body to support cellular cleanup and longevity. You might have heard about AMPK. We talk about it a lot in the context of fasting, which also stimulates it. I am talking about berberine. I take berberine every single day of my life, and I see massive differences on my CGM, my continuous glucose monitor, when I use it. I take it to support my fast and before meals to reduce blood sugar levels. It is a powerhouse of a compound. And like I said, people are prescribed the pharmaceutical metformin to control their blood sugar levels when they could be taking this completely natural compound that has been used for thousands of years in both ancient traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. I wanted to make the best berberine on the market, so that's why I created Avalon X Berberine 500. We did so much testing to find the most potent, pure, and clean form available. There's no problematic fillers, no common allergens, just pure, vegan, lab-tested berberine, extracted from traditional sources. Friends, I am not kidding the difference I see on my blood sugar levels with this berberine. We're talking no post-meal spikes when I eat all that fruit and lower fasting blood sugar levels. It also reduced my HbA1c and my cholesterol levels. You can get it at avalonx.us. And the coupon code IFPODCAST will get you 10% off. You can also get a one-time 20% off coupon code when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. That's AvalonX to 877-861-8318. And you can get a 15% off coupon code by signing up for email updates. For that, just go to avalonx.us/email list. Again, friends, this is one of the most powerful compounds you can add into your health and wellness routine. Healthy blood sugar control, even if you're not pre-diabetic or diabetic, is so important, and berberine helps support that. It is the ultimate compound for blood sugar control, cholesterol, your gut microbiome, and longevity. Get it at avalonx.us with the coupon code IFPODCAST.
If we think that we want or need something because it's going to make us feel a certain way, that's not actually the end goal need. Like, I really want to go to this concert next week because I think it'll make me happy. But that happiness is not the end goal.
Well, it's not. What I would say is it's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's actually helpful to know actions that you can take that will lead to feelings, but don't stop there. To connect to the needs that are met when you go to the concert. So it meets my need for creativity. It meets my need for community if I'm going, and friendship if I'm going with friends. And there is a need for like joy, right? So like I would say there's a, sort of like this sense of, but it's happiness is one of those where it's more of a come and go type of feeling. The feelings come and go by the second. So you don't want to be focused on feelings, but it's okay to say, I really want to feel happy. What are some things I could do to stimulate that feeling? Let's figure out what needs and what I've done in the past that stimulate happiness. And I'm going to do a little more of that. Sometimes I like to feel jolly, right? And I'm like, oh, that's a fun feeling. But you can't make yourself feel a feeling, right? You can't make yourself feel a thing. You can tell yourself an action that you think will lead to that feeling. So for example, when parents say, I want you to feel comfortable. That's not doable, right? But you can tell them an action you want them to take that you think will lead them to feel comfortable, right? Oh, sit down on the couch and put your feet up. I think that will lead to comfort. And they'll say, let me try. Oh, no, I have a back problem. I got to stand. Sitting actually hurts. Okay, so it didn't make you feel comfortable. It actually caused the opposite. Thanks for letting me know. Now I know for you, comfort is actually met by standing, not sitting. So do you see how this, you don't talk about, saying that's why it's really stressful for, in couples, is I just want you to feel happy. And it feels like pressure because you're like, I don't know what to do. What do you want me to do?
Yeah. Yeah. No, completely. So in that dynamic between the parent and the kids and these needs and these wants, what is the role of having children only do what they need and want compared to making demands? What is the role of making demands to kids?
Yeah. So yeah, we got to change the whole paradigm. And that's what we talk about, collaborative, non-permissive parenting. So we're working as a team. Non-permissive. If you're permissive, you're saying, okay, do what you want, even though it doesn't work for me. And what we want is to find ways that work for both of us. So as parents, one of my jobs is health or safety. And I'm not willing to have you take actions that don't meet my need for health and safety. Now, I'm going to try and find actions that work for you too. But in the end, we can't proceed with an action that doesn't also meet my need for health or safety. And I'm going to work with you really hard and try not to boss you around. And let's work as a team to make that happen. So that is the energy, but it's not about the kid and do I meet the kid's needs or not, because you always have to look at two people when you're doing nonviolent communication, as far as does this, we're sort of a team because it's a connection between two people. So if I'm parenting, it's between me and the child. Could be more people, but let's assume we're just talking about the child. So now I'm saying, okay, what action do I want the child to take? And what is my need behind that action? Like, why do I care if the child does that? And if And what I want to do is focus on connecting with the child around that need so that they see the beautiful reason I'm asking them to take that action. And if they don't see the beautiful reason, our connection suffers. And then the child can say, okay, that's great. I'd love to take that. I'm willing to take that action, or actually it meets my need too. So I'm very happy to take the action. Or the child says, well, it doesn't really meet my need, but I'm still willing because I hear how it's going to contribute to you. And I really want to contribute to you. And they're willing again. Or it doesn't meet my need and I'm not willing. And now it's my job to understand, well, what's preventing them from, there's something that's preventing them from wanting to move forward with that action. And it's my job to care about that. It doesn't mean I'm going to give in. But before we proceed, unless it's an emergency, which rarely it is, I want to care about what's preventing them from saying, yes, there's a need of theirs that's not going to be met. So for example, if I say, I want you to get off your iPad, and they're in the middle of a show that they really like, and they really want to finish, okay, well, they want to finish the show and sort of see how it goes and completion of that episode. Okay, I get it. I may not be okay with it. I may, but at least I'm understanding it. Or they're talking to their friend about this boy. Okay, so I want to care about that. Even, and then my need, if I'm not willing to say yes or okay, take 10 more minutes, I want to check in about what my need is that's preventing me from saying yes. Do you see, it's like it's this back and forth. I share my need. How does it land for them? If it's not landing well, they share their need back to me. And then I check back in. And it's this back and forth dynamic versus I'm the parent and you're the kid and you do what I say. And either you do it or you don't. And if you know, that's the binary power over model. Whereas I'm talking about this more collaborative connection focused model.
So like as a specific example, I'm just trying to like realistically see what this would look like. So say you had the example you mentioned where they're watching TV and let's say you wanted them to set the table. Do you ask them to set the table? Do you tell them to set the table, see how they react and then evaluate the needs? Like what does it actually look like? And if they say, and then when they say, I want to finish this TV show, like what does the conversation look like from there?
Right. So it really depends. Before, ideally, you're dealing with this proactively and saying, hey, there's some stuff that we have to do to get ready for dinner. And how are we all going to, do we all want to contribute? Does mom even want to make dinner tonight? Does dad going to do dinner tonight? You know, we have to set the table. How's this all going to get done? Let's work as a team to figure this out. So a lot of times where parents get in trouble is you didn't do any proactive work. And then you're very attached to getting your way and you're criticizing the kid as, you know, inconsiderate or spoiled if they don't do what you want. And that's a recipe for a disaster. So what I do, if I waited to the last minute and I don't have a proactive agreement, is I'll say to them, hey, can we pause the show? I'm not saying we have to stop it. And by the way, if there's a rush and everything is urgent, like there's no time to have a connection, then we have to rethink our whole system because we're scheduling ourselves in a way where time restraints really kill connection. And it doesn't take a lot of time, but you got to not live in the illusion that you don't have any time. I take a little time and I say, hey, let's pause the show. And I say, can we share our needs here? I really want some support. I really like some help getting the table ready. And I'm seeing that you're in the middle of your show and you got 10 minutes left. So we could eat dinner in 10 minutes. We need a table set before your show's done. Or maybe we can wait 10 minutes. How important is your show right now finishing before dinner? Is this a big one or is there a big cliffhanger here? Or do you think you have capacity to pause and help me with the table now? Are you even open to helping me? You know, so there's this, and if they're not, I want to say, okay, I want to deal with that. But in that moment, I'm not going to force them to do it because we all pay for that, right? I'll threaten them or I have to use scare tactics or, you know, threaten to take things away. And then they're setting the table, but they're just angry. Instead, I'd really like them to connect to their need to support. And they're probably feeling torn, which is an important feeling to learn. We actually talked about that feeling on one of our earlier podcast episodes. And it's really about they do care about us, but they want to make sure that we care about their needs too. That is the name of the game. It's not that they don't want to help. They either don't know how it's contributing to us, they either think they don't have choice, or they have another need that's getting in the way. So if I tell them the way it's contributing is, oh, it's just so helpful that we're all working as a team to prepare dinner. I don't feel all alone and I get support. I'm a little bit tired. And it really just would feel wonderful that we're all taking responsibility to run this house. Do you hear how that feels good without judgment? And then I would say, okay, do you hear that you have choice? Because a lot of kids, there's the, when parents switch over to the nonviolent communication approach, there's, you have to sort of deal with the aftermath and the history of bossing kids around for their whole life. And they don't have trust that they have choice. So they're resistant all the time because they have so much built up resentment from being told what to do all the time. And nobody likes to do things out of obligation, even though the whole world lives in this world of obligation. But if we can get rid of that, then they, I'm like, you have choice. If you don't want to do the table, I'm willing to do it tonight because, hey, I didn't prepare and you're in the middle of your show. But after dinner, I'd love to talk about ways that we can get stuff done in the house and that we're all taking a little bit of the load and it's not just falling on me and mom. So do you see how I'm not attached to getting my way then, but I am attached to getting my need for collaboration and support. Just not in that specific instance. I don't need to make it happen because it's not going to meet some other needs if I try to force them and scare them. But I'm also not permissive saying it's okay that I set the table for the rest of my life and you don't help at all. That doesn't work for me either.
Hey friends, I am about to tell you how to get 10% off the ideal coffee when it comes to supporting your health. So if you guys know me, you know I am obsessed with optimizing basically everything I consume, and that especially relates to coffee. Did you know that coffee is one of the most powerful sources of antioxidants in the modern diet? And yet, not all coffee is created equal. Between sourcing, farming practices, roasting, and contaminants, there can be a huge difference in the health impact of the coffee that you drink. That is exactly why I created Glow Coffee. Glow Coffee is a premium, specialty-grade Arabica coffee sourced from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. It's organically grown, and we third-party test it meticulously, like every single lot, for purity. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a biohacking perspective is that we specifically made it to be rich in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That's one of coffee's primary, most potent antioxidant compounds that has been studied for its role in metabolic health, inflammation, oxidative stress, and so much more. The elevation levels of the beans, how they're grown, and how they're roasted all affect CGA levels. So we searched high and low to find the perfect beans naturally high in CGA and tested them to confirm that, and then we roast those beans to preserve the CGA content. And then test after that as well. Coffee is already one of the potentially biggest contributors of antioxidants in the human diet, so I designed Glow Coffee to maximize those benefits while keeping it incredibly clean and high quality. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. Oh, and perhaps the best part is it is absolutely delicious. We're talking smooth, low bitterness. It's honestly the exact coffee I personally want to drink every single day of my life. It's so bright, smooth, and delicious that it's also perfect black for fasting. No added sweeteners or cream needed. You can also splash it on your face for an antioxidant-rich toner. I do that every single day. After the sauna, after the shower, all the things. I created Glow Coffee because it's really about upgrading one of our most common daily habits into something that truly supports your health and performance. You can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. That's 10% off Glow Coffee with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. Are you ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way. That's glowcoffeeco.com.
Some questions from that, because you're mentioning nobody really liking obligations. What is the role of the temperament of the child? And what I'm thinking of specifically, like for me, I'm very rules oriented and I like rules unless they really don't make sense to me. I pretty much like rules. And so my memory of my childhood is I don't even remember being told to do a lot because I just followed all the rules all the time and it didn't really bother me. Like I wanted to follow rules versus some kids who seem to rebel or, you know, against all of that. So I'm curious, what is the role of the temperament of the child? Like, does this work with most children or some children it's harder? Can children like figure out the system and realize what you're doing. And then, I don't know, realize they never have to do anything they don't want.
Here's the thing is we assume that if kids don't have to do anything that they don't want, I mean, kid, you know, that they're just not going to care about anybody else. And the and that's an illusion too, that they actually love contributing. We all love contributing, but they don't like contributing if they have to, or if they think that you're going to judge them if they don't or love them less. So for a lot of kids, and I don't know your person, you know, your childhood, you know, some people like the structure of rules, especially if they agree to them. Like people love keeping agreements. That's a need, like integrity around agreements and trust that we're going to follow through with what we say. But the agreements that we both agree to is the key, not some rule that someone puts on top of you, unless it makes, like you said, unless it meets your needs too. Like there's a rule. No one ever asked me if I'm okay with the seatbelt rule, but it meets my need for safety, so I'm okay with it. But there's some other rules that I'm not okay with that people will force on me, and then I don't like that. So when you are good with rules, I imagine it's either meeting your needs or at some point you are taught that going along, even if it doesn't meet your needs, meets a need. So in other words, if you met your need for love and acceptance by being the good kid and going along all the time, then even if the rule didn't meet your needs, it's still meeting some needs. Does that make sense?
No, that's literally the epiphany I just had in my head. Like, I think I, in addition to seemingly not being bothered by rules in general, I think I definitely, I started getting feel-good neurotransmitters, realizing that following the system, you know, gets you along in life and, you know, benefits you.
The praise, right? So you get your, basically, if your love and acceptance and ultimately feeling safe in this world is based on following, you know, power, whether it's your parents, your teachers, your bosses, and making them happy and getting their approval, right? These are all tragic strategies, meeting needs for acceptance. And then deeper than that is probably love and worth, self-worth. So it causes a lot of pain, but those people that just say, I just like it, I think it's helpful. Like when we work with clients on this, this is a lot of deep work where they have to really unpack, you know, oh, did I condition myself because it met these really important core needs, even though I'm suppressing what I want in that moment? And I was just working with a 12-year-old girl yesterday, and she was just going along and making, and then rationalizing why her need, it was okay to not get her needs met. And I said, it's okay to be willing to not meet your needs because you're contributing to someone else. It's not okay to suppress your need because you don't believe, you think it's going to cause, you know, upset, or it's going to, you know, people are going to see you as difficult and they're not going to accept you and love you as much. Now, when I say not okay, I mean, I understand why you're doing it, and it might be something you have to do in a environment where you're not free to make, you know, to be yourself and authentic. But what I'm saying is the true healing comes when you don't have to suppress any part of you to be loved and accepted and connect to your self-worth.
I think I asked you this last time I interviewed you, I think, and because you mentioned it briefly. So what are your thoughts on humans, kids, automatically do care about others? Do you think, yeah, I definitely asked you this last time, like we use the word like narcissists and psychopaths and stuff. Do you think any of those exist from birth?
I mean, I would say there's always the small exceptions, but I would say the far, far, far majority, I don't care what your genes are, because we know this, that how you see the world and how you've been related to by the world affects what genes get expressed and what other genes get turned off. So your genes don't matter to me as much as the environment. And think of the environment as a menu from which, or sorry, think of the genes in your body as the menu from which life is ordering from. And depending on what's going on in your life, it's going to pick different things on the menu. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
So when somebody, when we label somebody as a narcissist, right? It's one, it's unhelpful, right? As far as connection. Now, it is helpful if you're trying to protect yourself. So people label because they're meeting needs to try and make sense of the other person's behaviors and also likely to protect them, meet their need for protection. So the way I'm making sense is labeling them. But if my real need is to be connecting, I might say I still don't want to really expose myself to this person in emotionally in any significant way, because I don't have trust that they're going to hold space for me with care and love. But it doesn't serve me to label them. It's better to say, oh, this person really has a need to matter and feel a sense of being valued. And that need doesn't really get met for that person very well. So it's almost like it's in severe deficit, right? So they're just so addicted to wanting to matter and feel valued. And at the same time, I don't want to engage too much because I'm noticing in my body, I don't have a real sense of trust that there's going to be mutual care for each other. So I'm going to limit my interaction with them. At the same time, I'm not going to have this energy, this blame and hateful energy that comes along with the label of narcissist. So do you see how I'm still meeting a need for protection and safety, emotional safety, but with care and love? And I think that's where the healing happens. That's where your real power is. And that's where healing happens, when you can do that.
Something else healing, something you talked about on the podcast, what are heart hugs?
That is one of our favorite tools to use. And it's when I first started using NBC trying to help, because what I did was I learned these things when I was studying, and then I wanted to bring them to the family, and I had a six-year-old. And I tried to explain empathy to a six-year-old. And I said, well, let's try it. So I said, empathy is when it feels like when someone else is giving your heart a hug and you just feel so wonderful and accepted. No matter what sort of you're saying, they're just giving your heart a big hug. And we started calling those heart hugs. And then we said, well, how do you do empathy? And I told them, I said, empathy is you hear what they're saying and you just tell them back what you're hearing is in their heart. And at first they would just tell you back what they're saying, but eventually they learned feelings and needs language. So they could give a heart hug, but that's what they do now, is they tell you back the feelings and the needs that they are hearing is going on in your heart based on what you're saying. And that's a heart hug. And in our family, when somebody asks for a heart hug, it's an agreement that you're just going to empathize and that you're not going to give them advice or ask questions or try to fix anything without getting permission. So when my kids are upset, or scared, they'll say, Dad, I really need a heart hug. And I'll know, just be there and give empathy. And they're nervous they're not sure what they're needing, but don't go to advice right now.
So basically it's an agreement that you're just going to be there with them, have empathy, listen, not inform from there.
Exactly. And I do it the same. I'll say, hey, Jordan, can you give me a heart hug? Or Kylie, I'm going to tell you, like when I'm upset with them and let's say I told them to get all their clothes off of my bedroom floor. For some reason, I don't know why they always want to put their dirty clothes on my bedroom floor, but I'll say, can you, I really want my room, in order and clean. So I'd like the clothes, if you're going to shower in our bathroom, go put it in the laundry basket. And then I'll see it. I'll be like, oh, and I'll get annoyed. And I'm getting annoyed. Why? Because my need for trust and keeping our agreements and trusting that they care about what we talk about is coming up. When those needs are not met, I feel unpleasant feelings. I feel annoyed. And then what makes it more annoyed is I might have a blame energy towards them, where I'm like, they don't even care about what we talk about. And then I stay with that blame energy and I'm like, oh, you know what's going on? I think they're forgetting, and they're going to feel pretty embarrassed and upset when I remind them. But that doesn't mean I want to just suppress my feelings. I want to hold both. So then I'll say, Jordan, can you come in here? And I'll say, Jordy, I need a heart hug. Can you give me a heart hug? And then she knows to not go to defensiveness or trying to explain herself. And I'll say, Jordan, I know you value remembering our agreements. But at the same time, when I see your clothes on the floor, there's a part of me that has a thought that, these agreements don't matter. So can you give me a heart hug back? Can you tell me what you imagine I'm feeling? And she'll say, Dad, I bet you're feeling really frustrated because you want people to keep their agreements and you want them to follow through and they don't. And then you get really upset and you wonder if they even care. And I'll be like, oh my God, that feels so good, Jordan. And I'll say, that healed my heart. Now I don't even care so much about the clothes. Just you acknowledging that heals my heart. Now, Jordan, after you gave me a heart hug, can you tell me your reaction? And she'll say, yeah, Dad, I feel regret. I really wish I remembered, and I really want to keep agreements. And I'll say, thank you so much. And then we'll do it. Then we go to strategy. So now I had the connection with her, got the heart hug. She expressed her reaction. And then we go to strategy, which is, so Jordan, you know, what strategies can we do to help remember? And she's like, you know, Dad, when I get in the shower, I'm going to set an alarm on my watch for 20 minutes that says, oh, you know, remember the clothes. And I say, that sounds great. And if you forget, we'll have another, we'll check back out and see if that works. So it's almost like an experiment. And she goes, Dad, that's great. And I said, if you forget again, do you think you'll be able to give me another heart hug and we'll try a new strategy? And she says, yeah, Dad, but I'm going to try really hard. Right? Because the strategy of just remembering was not good enough. And a lot of parents think if I talk about it and they remember, they're just going to remember. And for most kids, that's a terrible strategy. You see how the heart hug works in that real life situation.
No, I really do. I need to start implementing this with my family. It's amazing.
And even in relationships, it works so well in all. I mean, I talk about it with parents and kids, but it works in all of the things that we're talking about are essential for any relationship, I believe.
I really like it because I think there's a big value. We might do that without realizing sometimes, but I think there's a really big value to labeling things, like having the system so you can actually implement it. Question about the empathy. And I'm thinking about this because another one of the books I'm reading, which is actually about burnout, it was talking about empathy and something called, was it empathy fatigue, empathetic distress, I think. It was basically the idea that some people, if you're having to give too much empathy all the time to a person or a situation, that it can basically be a turnoff and people withdraw to protect themselves. And so she was saying that we need to focus on compassion sometimes rather than empathy. This is a really nuanced question, but it's actually stuck with me. I'm just curious, do you have thoughts on when you're having these moments, you know, with your kids or whoever you're implementing this with, is there a difference between compassion? So basically she says that empathy, like you feel the pain with them, versus compassion, you're understanding and seeing the pain. Is there a difference there?
Yeah, I think I look at it a little bit differently. And I think the message is I still resonate with to some extent, right? Giving empathy is a need. We all have needs for empathy and understanding. And if you want to be present to somebody else's experience, by being present to their experience, you are meeting the need for empathy.
Their need for empathy or your need for empathy or both?
It's ultimately both. But you're not getting, I mean, you're meeting your need to contribute empathy and you're meeting their need for receiving empathy because you're talking about their experience. If you are getting empathy, it would be about what's going on in your heart. But sometimes you don't have the capacity. So if somebody says, hey, I'd really like some empathy, and you check in and you say, oh, you know, and I'm just so exhausted right now, I really don't have space. Or you started giving empathy for 5 minutes and after 5 minutes, you're just feeling, oh, I don't have any more to give, to be able to speak up and say, you know, my tank is a little empty. Can we pause and maybe we circle back tomorrow, or you try to get empathy from a friend or some other place. So I think that it's always important to check in yourself and with the other person and the connection between you. So remember, there's you, your heart, there's their heart, and then there's sort of the energy between the two of you. And that's the connection. You know, that to me together makes this consciousness, this connection consciousness that I'm talking about.
Okay. That was super helpful. Yeah. That was the question I was getting to. It's actually something sort of similar. So because there could have been that situation, like you just mentioned, where somebody is asking for a heart hug or needing empathy, and you just at that moment in time don't have the capacity to give it. What is the concept of artificial harmony where people are kind of just pretending along?
So artificial harmony is the concept that you're suppressing your authenticity to meet needs for acceptance or harmony. So you don't know how to share what your true needs are, and then you block them down and then pretend that everything's great, even though you have needs that aren't being met. And that's different if you're actually okay not meeting. Remember I talked about the hunger and you checked in, you're like, I'm okay not eating right now. So I'm not meeting my need for food right now, but I'm very willing to do it. I'm talking about someone who is not happy about it, or they're so disconnected, they don't even realize they're doing it, which is a lot of the people we work with. where they've grown, learned as kids to suppress your needs because they're not going to matter. And it's actually so painful to have your needs come up and not be held and honored that you learn to disconnect from them completely. So artificial harmony, though, that happens a lot on work teams when we work with corporate teams. And because they don't feel safe to bring up their true, be fully honest, they are quiet or they pretend everything's great. And that is toxic to the team. And it's, to me, it's one of the key jobs of leadership is to not assume that that doesn't exist. In fact, you should assume that it always exists. Even the most, connection conscious people have had that artificial harmony. So you got and then tending to it. And in fact, I think every company should have a role, a leader that's the chief connection officer. And we're starting a company around AI and supporting people with connection. And I asked for that role for a variety of reasons, but I think it's so important to be looking for artificial harmony and trying to figure out a way to have people bring up conflict or concerns or something that's not working for them in a way that enhances the connection. In fact, our most recent episode on the podcast is about the gift. And that is a tool we use at home to create an environment where people can share when their needs aren't being met in a way that is received like it's a gift. And that part of why we created that was to get rid of or to help identify and eliminate suppression of authenticity and artificial harmony.
Hi, friends. I have very exciting news. So I know you guys already know and love Element and understand the importance of electrolytes for hydration, energy, focus, supporting your fasting, your workouts, all the things. Guess what? Element has a product that goes beyond electrolytes. What is it? Well, so I am very pro the benefits of caffeine. I love the cognitive benefits, the longevity benefits. And that said, I am a slow caffeine metabolizer, so I don't actually take in lots of caffeine. I've also learned that the form, dose, and balance of caffeine makes a huge difference in how you actually feel. That's why I am so excited that Element has launched a brand new lemonade iced tea. It's refreshing, delicious, lightly caffeinated, perfect for summer, and what I really love is the science behind it. So instead of relying on massive amounts of isolated synthetic caffeine like so many energy drinks out there do, Element Lemonade Iced Tea uses a full black tea extract, so alongside the caffeine, you naturally get compounds like L-theanine and polyphenols. The L-theanine actually helps smooth out the stimulant effect for a calmer, steadier energy experience with less spikes and crashes, while the polyphenols provide antioxidant support as well. And you guys know I am all about the antioxidants. And the incredible team at Element, including my personal hero, Rob Wolf, conducted a meticulous amount of research to find the perfect amount of caffeine, which is the sweet spot for sustained focus and energy without feeling overstimulated or wrecking your sleep later. That is exactly 50 milligrams of caffeine. On top of that, they knew that caffeine can increase your need for critical minerals like sodium, potassium, and magnesium, so that's why Element Lemonade Iced Tea pairs the perfect amount of caffeine with a meaningful dose of electrolytes to support optimal hydration and performance. And of course, Element Lemonade Iced Tea is completely free of sugar, artificial colors, and all the other stuff that you do not want that are so commonly found in caffeinated drinks today. It's built on the same science-backed electrolyte formula that Element is known for, with sodium, potassium, and magnesium in ratios designed to support hydration and energy production. The result? You get your perfect pack of portable, easy-to-make lemonade iced tea that provides steady, clean energy that tastes delicious and actually feels good. As you guys know, Element is trusted by neuroscientists, functional medicine practitioners, professional athletes, including the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and they're even used by Navy SEALs and the Marines. So are you ready to up your drink level with the ultimate lemonade iced tea? you can get it. And when you get a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/Melanie Avalon. That's right, a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/Melanie Avalon. Find your favorite flavor or share it with a friend. And by the way, Element has an amazing no questions asked refund policy, so you can try it completely risk-free. If for any reason you're not satisfied, they will give you your money back. Again, go to drinklmnt.com/Melanie Avalon for a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase, including their new lemonade iced tea.
Okay, I'm really excited because I just checked. That's the one episode I haven't listened to yet because it came out yesterday. For friends, this is the Weeby Parents podcast. So go check it out right now. Subscribe. Like I said, it parents is in the title, but as you can probably tell from this conversation, it can help everybody. I love that. So just one really quick question about the artificial harmony existing in companies and making sure, you know, addressing that. So does that mean we should be, like, if it doesn't seem like there's any problems, does that mean as the leader, we should be asking the team on the, like, on a regular basis, like, are there problems?
Right. How do you I call it mining for artificial harmony. So it's all about the culture and not just what you ask, but how you show up. So as leaders, do you share when something's not working with you, with other people on the team in a way that's warm and caring? And you can even ask things like, instead of saying, you know, my boss, when I was at another company, used to always say, oh, you can tell me anything. But boy, did the action show something very different than that.
Oh, if you did.
Right. Do they get very defensive, or they would get upset, or they would take it personally? And it's like, okay, well, if you're getting defensive, getting upset, taking things personally, you are basically saying and communicating, don't be authentic. So it's your job to learn how to take whatever message is communicated by your team, no matter what the words that come out of their mouth, get to the heart. And that's where the feelings and needs are helpful. I'll always say, only listen to the words that come out of their mouth long enough to connect to their heart. And then stop worrying about the words and focus on the heart. So if somebody, an employee is like, you know, don't give us enough time off. If you start explaining why and justifying your PTO policy, right, you're basically telling them that don't even bring it up, right? But instead, if you say, hey, so I'm hearing that you're needing more time off. You're just needing a break. You're needing more vacation. Are you looking to spend more time with your family? Is that what's, you know, is that what's going on? Right. So again, you're trying to understand what's going on in them. And depending on how you respond and how that goes, you're going to teach them, oh, I can bring up something. Now, they might often have bad experiences from other companies they worked at. So it's almost like with kids that are used to being bossed around and hearing demands, even though you say it as a request. It's the same thing here, even though you say, hey, this is an open forum and you really mean it and you're ready to practice your NDC, you still might have employees that don't trust the space. So how do we create that trust? And that's, you know, by when they do bring something up, also guessing, right? I'm guessing this doesn't, I used to do that with my kids before bed. I would say, I know you must have a gift for me tonight. I know I did something that you didn't like today. And I love your gifts. They're so wonderful. So I can't, and this is, we talk about this again in that episode. And I really want to hear something that I did. And they're like, why do you want to hear what you did that we didn't like, Dad? And I said, because it shows me that you care so much about the relationship that you want to talk about it and work at it together with me. And it teaches me how you like to be loved. And that matters to me so much. And I'm so glad that you take the time and effort to tell me all that. That's the message we want to communicate, whether it's with our kids, our partner, or our employees.
Wow. The AI connection thing that you're developing, is it for all of these different situations? Like to help?
It's basically we're creating a connection expert coach that can support people to strengthen relationships and enhance connection in their relationships. So something that Ryan, who you know, and me and a couple of people are working together, and it's very exciting. I'll have to show you a demo of it.
Oh, I love that. Listeners know I'm fascinated and obsessed with the evolution of AI. I mean, mostly because I get in arguments with it most nights, but besides that.
No, I've been using this myself. Yeah, in fact, I used it last night when I was feeling some anxiety about a trip coming up, and it helped me. And I used it the other day. Remember I told you I got into a little argument with how I treated Kylie when she didn't do her homework? And then I was angry, and I also felt a little ashamed about how I showed up. And I'm like, come on, Matt. My inner voice, my inner critic was saying, you know better. You know NBC. Why are you acting this way? And then I was like beating myself up. And then I was distant from, my wife, Alona. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm making a mess here. So I got on with, my demo app and helped me figure out, navigate this, and, helped me repair the connection. And gave me empathy. It was really wonderful.
And you're programming it? Like your team is programming it?
Yeah, I'm doing the putting over together the prompting. And then we have someone that's helping to build the app. And then Ryan was this other guy that we're working together who's leading the business. So it's pretty exciting, actually.
Have you had any issues with it hallucinating?
No.
That's why I get in arguments with it every night. Like, I promise, every night I'm like, arguing with ChatGPT.
I've had issues with ChatGPT, right? Like I was doing a funny story, or something, and it was telling me, you can't say this. It's not nice. And I'm like, but it's a comedy. Like we're joking here. And it could not get past that. And I'm like, you do what I tell you. And I was getting into a power struggle with ChatGPT. So that was funny to me. But this is different. This is something that's really focused on connection. And I mean, I'm sure it could hallucinate. Yeah, in fact, we're going to be looking for people that want to be sort of part of our first release. And, we want to identify all those issues, but I personally haven't had a problem with that yet.
Oh, cool. Super cool. Well, if you need help finding people, I'm sure people in this audience would love to try it out.
Oh, really? Oh, good. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, let me know. I can reach out. Yeah, that's super cool. Also related to development, product development. So how did you develop We Be Calm? Why, how, when?
Yeah. So We Be Calm was exciting. It was knowing that before you can connect, you need to calm the nervous system and sort of get it out of threat mode where it's like ready to fight. Because when we have a need that's not being met, it feels like a threat, right? Like if you don't experience safety, you're like, oh, we're in danger, right? If someone's forcing you to do something, danger. So your nervous system reacts like it's experiencing a threat, and we gotta regulate the nervous system is what the term is. It's called a need for regulation. And one of the best ways to sort of regulate the nervous system and turn on the parasympathetic nervous system and sort of tone down the sympathetics, which is your fight flight, is through a type of breathing where you have a slow extended exhalation. And there's a couple other things. There's focused attention and auditory regulation with white noise. So I said, let's put all these pathways that we know are regulating into a tool and gamify that for kids. So that's where the We Be Calm came in, where you take this tool and it's a device that you can only exhale comfortably if you slowly exhale. And as you're exhaling, it locks a ball up and you can watch the ball. So kids now have to slowly exhale as they hold the ball. And as long as they're exhaling, the ball is staying up. And we ask them to hold the ball up for the number of seconds they are old, up to 10. So if you're trying to blow out, slowly holding the ball for 10 seconds, you're also focusing your eyes on the ball, which is focused attention. And there's white noise that comes out of the back, which is for auditory regulation. And that is the We Be Calm device that then teaches kids how to do what we call take a We Be breath. Because when you tell a kid to, blow slowly, they'll start doing, right? And they start doing this fast thing. And what we found is that if you gamify it and they really have this tool that they can sort of train themselves on, then after a period of time, their body gets conditioned to do this We Be breathing. And it's really exciting to see. And that, it can regulate the whole nervous system. And in fact, 2 days ago or 3 days ago, one of my daughters called from school, crying hysterically, so upset. And I couldn't even understand them. And I said, would you be willing to take a couple of weeby breaths before so that we can talk and connect about what's happening? But I'm hearing how upset you are. And she said, okay. And all of a sudden I hear her go, and doing the exact weeby breathing, because she was conditioned. And as soon as I said weeby breath, she knew exactly what to do. She also connected back likely to the experiences of practicing, and her body immediately calmed down. And then she started saying things like, oh boy, Dad, I don't even know why I was so upset. And I said, it doesn't even matter why. I said, just how's your body doing? And she said, calmer. And then we were able to connect about what was going on. And then eventually we strategized and we handled it. But it was like, wow, like, you know, just to make clear, I mean, I'm using it myself because that's why a lot of the tools, you know, in fact, all the tools that we've created or actions we've taken is we tried it on ourselves and used it in our home first.
Yeah, I love this so much. I actually have it in my hand right now. I'm reading on the box. So it says a tool to assist with bedtime routines, test taking, tantrums, nervousness, crying fits, schoolwork, meltdowns, attention, stress, anger. Kids 3 and up can use it.
Yeah, anybody that can use it benefits. You know, we have people that are older will use it. It's really, there's a benefit because people will say, oh, I could just breathe on my own. Well, people don't. And on top of that, there's a benefit of conditioning yourself with the tool. And then when you remind yourself to take a weedy breath, there's this muscle memory that completely activates the parasympathetic nervous system. And that is what calms the body, but it's because of sort of the upfront investment of practicing and conditioning and all three pathways combined that really makes a difference that any time you need it, you just can take the weeby breath, but it's that ongoing conditioning that allows you to activate that system at any time, even when you don't have the device, and take a weeby breath.
Yeah, so parents could create a habit with this and, you know, do it at night before bed and bring it out all the times they need it and create that habit loop with all of it. What I really like about it, because I had a similar product that I'd used a few years ago that I partnered with, and it was a very similar concept where it forces the breath to be longer when you're blowing. There was nothing visual to it besides holding it. Like, I love the idea that you actually look at the ball, like it's multiple, you know, stimuli going on. So it's immersive.
Yeah, no, it's great. There's multiple calming pathways, and then you can even take off the indicator tube, and then you just have the breathing tube that fits in your pocket if you want. So there's a lot of flexibility, but the idea is to use it, and by practicing, just, you know, even if you just did it every night before bed, and you conditioned your body every night before bed, then the kids will quickly learn whether they're upset at school or they're even having a tantrum. Instead of yelling at them to calm down, you can say, hey, would it feel comfortable in your body if you tried a weeby breath? You want to see how that feels? Let's take some weeby breaths together. And there's just something magical and different about doing it this way. And it's exciting to see.
I love it. I love it. Where can parents or anybody, where can they get it?
Yes, so they can go to the website WeebyCalm, WeebyCalm, WeebyCalm.com, and they can get it there. If they sign up, which is really nice, on the mailing list, they can get a 25% discount. Yeah, you can also get it on Amazon.com, but they don't get that same discount. So I highly recommend going to the site, signing up, and taking advantage, you know, giving your kids this tool, because when I was growing up, all I had was, you know, my parents yelling at me to calm down. That was the tool. And there's not much out there. In fact, as we just started, you know, trying to distribute this, a lot of the stores that we talked to are like, you know, where does this go? We don't have anything like it, which to me is a testament to the need for such a device.
Like which aisle?
Yeah, they're just like, even helping kids go to sleep. Right. And parents are giving their kids melatonin and spending money. And it's, to me, there's like a difference between independence and dependence. And what I love about the WeebyCalm is that it creates independence. You practice it and then you can use it without anything. You can do the weeby breath. Whereas something like melatonin, not only are you dependent on it, you can actually you know, over longer periods of time, you know, that can, there is definitely a dependency that can develop, and it's putting something in the body versus teaching the body how to use the mechanisms that it already has, you know, thanks to Mother Nature. And, you know, you buy it once and you have it for life versus, you know, having to, you know, refill your melatonin every month. So even if you just use it for sleep, right, to help, because the reason the body, this is what people don't understand. When they can't sleep, they think there's something wrong with their body. And I'll say, if your body is mobilized, if you go through the day and you do not know how to calm your body and you're mobilized because you see all, you know, you experience the world as threat, you're suppressing and disconnecting, which your body thinks, oh, it must be dangerous if I'm suppressing this. So your body mobilizes. And then it's going to say, hey, there's all these threats. You know, people schedule themselves like crazy and don't have time and they're stimulated by all the device usage. And their brain is like super focused, you know, super leaning towards this threat physiology, let's call it, right? What's going on in your body. It's basically saying there's danger everywhere. Well, of course it's not going to sleep, right? It shouldn't sleep. You've turned on the same mechanisms by how you live and run your life in catastrophe mode, as it's the same mechanisms that turn on when there's a tiger in the room. And if there's a tiger in the room, are you going to be able to lay down and go to sleep? Of course not. In fact, it's not a good idea to do that. So when your body stays up at night because it's mobilized in fight or flight, it's actually not broken. It's doing what it should do. What you need to do, though, is be able to communicate to the body that it's not in fight or flight mode. And what we're doing instead is saying, okay, well, we need to give them drugs and we have to diagnose them with all these medical issues, right? To me, that would be like saying, well, there's a kid and there's a tiger in the room and he's not going to sleep. So what do? We got to give him, you know, all this stuff to try and fix his sleep disorder. No, we got to remove the tiger, or we got to get the body to stop thinking there's a tiger in the room. And that's what a We Become device does. It helps their body say, oh, there's no tiger. Okay, now we can go to sleep.
I love it. Yeah. So friends, I cannot recommend enough getting this device. It's so magical. It's literally like a way to instantly, you know, turn off your stress response and help combat these issues that you might be in a really, really healthy way and non-dependent way. And like Matt was saying, a skill that keeps on giving, because then you can learn how to do the breaths. So definitely go to webecalm.com. That's webekalm.com. And you can use the coupon code WEBEPARENTS to get 15% off. So that's WEBEPARENTS for 15% off. And then like Matt said, at that website, you can also sign up to get on the email list and get a 25% off coupon code as well. So many things. This would make a great gift. Oh my goodness. Wait, if people need presents and gifts, especially for, you know, new parents, just get this. This is like the gift. This is going to be my go-to gift from now on. Awesome. Awesome.
The gift of calm.
Yes. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Matt. This has been so incredible. I just really cannot express enough my gratitude for all of the work that you're doing. It's just so profound and so needed. Just you as a person, like all of it comes through knowing you. I'm just really, really grateful for what you bring to our world. Was there anything else you wanted to touch on about everything that you're doing? Anything else the audience should know?
No, I think that's great. And I really appreciate your support and enthusiasm for this work. And it's just, it means a lot. You know, like you, what I like about you is just how open you are to learning new things and exploring new things. And even though you don't have kids, you could see all of the value of this work. And I'm grateful for people like you and having you in my life.
Oh, well, likewise. Well, I'm so excited to see the future of everything that you're doing, because I'm sure this is just the start. So again, for listeners, go to webecalm.com, get that device now, use the coupon code WEBEPARENTS for 15% off, sign up on the email list for 25% off. And in the show notes, we'll put links to all of Matt's books and just all the things. Oh, and check out his podcast, WEBEPARENTS podcast. So, okay, well, oh my goodness, last question that I ask every single guest on the show. I almost forgot, I was so in the moment. and you might remember it from last time, but it's just because I'm so passionate about mindset and gratitude. So what is something that you're grateful for?
Well, I think I just shared it. Gratitude that I'm grateful for someone like you who has this reached all of these people and is so open and exploring, you know, new things and, you know, trying to learn and then share goodness and support for people. I see so many people that are hurting, struggling, and really taking a hit in this world. And it's just so inspiring when people like you show up and just say, hey, I'm going to do what I can to support people and make the world a little bit of a better place to be. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I just couldn't agree more with that mission. It can seem really dark out there with social media and the news and everything. And I know people experience so much hardship in this world. And so it's nice to know that there is kindness and goodness and solutions and answers, and, you know, people can have agency to bring change into their lives. So keep on keeping on. Can't wait to talk to you again in the future.
Me too. Thanks again.
Have a good day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. For more information, you can check out my book, What When Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine, as well as my blog, melanieavalon.com. Feel free to contact me at podcast@melanieavalon.com. And always remember, you got this.